The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
People who receive Social Security benefits are about to see more cash each month, but rising prices could offset the boost. The Social Security Administration says monthly checks will increase by 5.9% next year due to inflation. That's about $92 to an estimated $1,657 for 2022. To compare, in 2021, the cost of living adjustment was 1.3%, or about a $20 increase per month. Roughly 70 million people receive Social Security benefits in America, including retirees and Americans with disabilities.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to the Drew Mariani Show. I'm Sheila Logminas, filling in for Drew today. And I have a loaded show with wonderful guests and one important topics that you need to know about. All kinds of things, even those chips that are out there, semiconductor chips, things that go into electronic devices. And you're hearing about that all over the secular media. You're going to hear a little bit about that today. Will that affect your Christmas devices and gifts and things, or your other devices that you need all the time? We'll address that with a really good group who knows all about that. Congressman, a couple of congressmen, one right now coming up, and then Congressman Jeff Fortenberry is going to be talking with us in a little while about two major issues you need to know about. And filling you in on things a lot of the public just doesn't know out there in our country. And then also, you know, in the spiritual realm, everything goes together. It's not like the faith and life intersect. It's of a piece. So faith informs everything we do, which is my first guest, really. He's talking all about that. Faith should be the first thing that guides everything we do. That's our compass, our moral compass. Everything we do has a moral dimension. And we need to apply that. It can be about the markets. What's moral behavior in markets? What's moral behavior in business, in law, in politics, in media? We have a code, we journalists. Not sure how much many journalists are following it. I sure do. We do here on this network. But we all have a moral code that is far higher than we are or any entity is. And those of us who know that moral code and pray to follow it every day, then get the guidance we receive through divine providence. Well, joining me now on that topic and how it needs to follow us direct us in politics, where you can nod and say, yeah, we really need that in politics, right? Well, we need that in all of our lives. And we need to start with ourselves. That's what my guest has done. Former Congressman Dan Lipinski is here. He has served a very long time in the Illinois, the 3rd District. And he's been recently, he and I were at an event together where I was the MC, and he was the honoree of an award given each year to someone very special for the public witness they've given to life. And it's his witness on the life issues that had so much effort go into the Planned Parenthood and abortion industry group try to drive him out of office so that there would be no Democrats for life. There still are some. But Dan Lipinski didn't survive the second attempt in getting him out of office. Dan Lipinski served 8 terms in the U.S. House of Representatives for Illinois' 3rd Congressional District, but he served America and on issues that we consider to be of the highest importance, starting with human life itself. He gave a lecture in a series at a Catholic high school in Ann Arbor, Michigan, turned that into a really important article in America Magazine, Confessions of a Pro-Life Catholic Democrat in a Divided Nation. Congressman Lipinski, thank you for being here today. We really need to talk about this and how divided we really are in America.
Well, thank you for having me, Sheila. One thing I know, the title online is of that article in America is what you just said, Confessions of a Pro-Life Catholic Democrat in a Divided Nation. But if you go to the print edition, it is the title that I had actually given it initially, Catholic First, which is what we all need to do in our entire lives, including in the public square. And that is what I did with God's grace, serving 16 years in Congress.
And that is so well put, Congressman, Catholic First, because so many people don't identify that way. In fact, even, I don't know, maybe this is just me being a little bit too specific about things that other people don't. I think words are that important and that powerful. And therefore, when people say, you know, American Catholics, I'm an American Catholic. I think it should be the other way around. You're a Catholic American. Catholic is first. The adjective defines, said Father Richard John Newhouse, rest in peace, back in the day when he would give these kinds of talks as well. But Congressman Lipinski, so you were a pro-life Catholic Democrat. You let that word be first, but Catholic first, as you say. And yet, you know yourself, there are other members of Congress who are Catholic, but a lot of people don't know that. It's not that a necessary thing. Is it that people know that? And on the other hand, that is what should be informing every decision they make.
Well, yes, it is something that every Catholic should be, have at the foremost of their mind, the forefront of their mind, whatever they are doing. It is what we're all called to do. It's not easy, especially these days. You don't have to be a politician to feel the pressure to conform to the world and conform to our society, as fallen as it is today. But we are all called to have that courage. And look, we all fail. I failed at times, but that doesn't mean that we don't pray for the strength and always go back and be willing to take up that battle with love to live the lives and live the truth that we know through our Catholic faith.
So let's talk about, of course, take up the truth, as we know in our Catholic faith, and apply it to everything we do. It's getting extra hard in politics. Congressman Lipinski, is getting extra hard in media. I not only never will give up, I'm speaking more about that and writing more about that. The Catholic media, the media in general, Catholic media and secular media, when you're Catholic and you're in that, you have to realize the morality of what you're doing, the power of words, the importance of that, because we can get to that in the conversation, but that's involved in everything you do. The floor debates in the House or in the Senate, that's words, you know, how they're used to tell the people, bills, how bills are written, how laws that are enacted are written, and what gets loaded in to maybe a reconciliation bill. People need to know these things because they just hear all these word clouds and they don't know what they mean. So speaking of words meaning things, you've given us some just so much to think about in that address in that Ann Arbor Catholic High School that's now turned into the America Magazine article, Catholic First. So about our divide right now, Congressman, that divide even not just runs through politics, Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives. Within each party, they're divided. And then between each party, they're divided. But Congressman, we know that Americans are even divided in the pews. So unfortunately, the politics has entered our church and evangelicals and other religions, other faiths and other denominations. But what do you tell us, the Ann Arbor Catholic High School students, and all of us in this article, about this deep division and polarizing division right now? It seems to be more toxic than ever. Does it seem that way to you?
It's certainly more toxic now than it has been in my lifetime. We are all basically given the message that we need to choose one of these two sides. And a lot of people talk about this division as being tribal, but it really fits all the definitions of being sectarian. It really is a moralized belief. There is a set of values and beliefs that go with each of these two sides, and the Catholics don't fit neatly into either of the two. And so we really need, it takes a lot of courage to say, no, I'm not going to choose one of those two. I am going to choose to follow the truth, and as we are taught as Catholics. And the only way for our country, I mean, I think this divide in our country has, it's a real threat. Congress really does not work anymore, partly because of this divide. I just wrote a piece for the Atlantic magazine about how the House essentially doesn't work anymore. It just passes partisan legislation. It's too extreme. to go anywhere in the Senate, leading to either gridlock or the Senate passes every major law over the last decade that has been enacted. But it also just, it splits people, it drives people apart. And as Catholics, mm-hmm. we need to speak the truth, and we need to not just say, well, you know, one side is better than the other. And certainly, look, on the issue of abortion, on the issue of religious freedom, I understand Catholics who say, well, because of those issues, we've got to join the Republican team. And I say, well, look, we are in a country where we have two parties. Yes, you usually have to make a decision between candidates of one party or the other. But that does not mean that you need to embrace every single policy, way of viewing things that side chooses. I mean, some people say, well, there are issues that drive me to be a Democrat. I vote for the Democrats. Okay. But you need to have the courage to speak up if you're going to be a Democrat and say abortion is evil. As the Pope continues to tell us, abortion is homicide. And it seems like some people, even people in the church who are really confusing, I think purposely trying to confuse the fact of where Pope Francis stands. I mean, Pope Francis continues to speak out about the evil of abortion, but if you read the mainstream media, you would think that you'd think that maybe Pope Francis really isn't pro-life. But again, that's because everyone is trying to put everyone else, put themselves into one of these two categories. And if Pope Francis, talks about the environment and people want to focus on that, then they say, well, he cares more about the environment than he does about babies in the womb. No, we can care. We can follow all the teachings of the church. And that's what mm-hmm. we are called to do, and not let a political party.
Uh-oh, sounds like we lost Oh, there you are. You've come in and out, Dan, and it's not. I'm talking with, I'm Sheila Logminas in for Drew today, and talking with Dan Lipinski, congressman who represented Illinois' 3rd District for many, many year, terms. And we're talking right now about the division in politics and within parties and even for Catholics. And Dan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, you kind of went in and out. Okay. You're right about the Pope. In fact, a lot of people, maybe even Catholics, Dan, don't even know that Pope Francis has referred to abortionists as hitmen and, you know, like hiring a hitman. And so for those who don't think the Pope has spoken out on abortion, he's spoken out in stronger terms than a lot of us have by saying that. But you're right, Dan, that when he brings up anything about the environment, and he does that often, he wanted to attend the upcoming global climate, whatever it is, summit meeting of different nations leaders. He wanted to attend that. If his health would hold up, he's not going to be able to, but he wanted to. So therefore, some people put him in the category, oh, you're really, you know, Pope is liberal. He's really left-wing liberal. Well, it's, you know, it's all of a piece. He is Peter. He is the Pope, and he does speak out on these things. And yet, so you write and you speak out, Dan Lipinski, on this divide in America. And you say that the extreme, so now in politics, the extreme policy divide between the parties on many issues, may, as we know, makes policymaking very difficult. But you say, then you go on to say, but sectarian division makes policymaking virtually impossible. Is that the sectarian division you're talking about in terms of identifying ourselves with one party or another? So it's either or, and that's going to determine everything else about how you live?
Well, that it's either or that determines everything else, but also that the people, those on the other side, the out group, the other group, they're evil. And you cannot talk, you cannot negotiate, you cannot deliberate, you cannot compromise with evil. And I agree, you can't compromise with evil, but you cannot view people who disagree with you on maybe one issue or a couple issues or a multitude of issues, you can't just say that they are evil and write them off. First of all, it's bad in politics. I mean, I've always learned politics is a game of addition. You need to bring people in. But look, what's really the most important game of addition is bringing people to Christ. And if we just decide we are going to write people off, we have not learned from Jesus. I mean, it just is plain and simple as that. And Jesus did not write people off. He came for the sinners. And we also have to engage with people who disagree with us on some serious, very important issues. We need to engage with them, or else we are never going to win them over for Christ or win them over to our side in terms of what we believe and in what we want to do in our political system. And, you know, what we want to do, we have a pluralistic system, we government by the people, where we need to win people over if we are going to get the policies that we want to see for our nation, the laws for our nation. So with sectarianism, both sides say, well, it's no use. The other side is, you know, whatever word, you know, deplorables. You know, we can't, you know, we just have to write them off. In that, we can't do that. We can't continue to do that, neither as Christians nor as Americans. And as Americans, we are really risking the future of our country.
So that gets back to what I was referring to in the power of words, Congressman Dan Lipinski, because being serving 8 terms in the House of Representatives for the 3rd District of Illinois, 3rd Congressional District, Congressman Dan Lipinski, you know what goes on inside, in sort of within the party zone, behind the closed doors, what the tactics will be, what the overall strategy will be. And you also know on the floor, when you work together in a bipartisan way, which you are one of the members of Congress when you served, who was so good at that. So you know how those who so staunchly drive abortion policy do that. And you know the language they use, the strategy they want, and the tactics they use to get there. You also know the pro-life members of Congress and people in the general population. So when you say we need to win them over, because this is evil and there's no question about it, human life begins at conception and it ends a human life to perform an abortion at any point along the way. After that, the human life that exists. So, knowing that, I mean, that's not the language that is often going to convince people so dug in with their beliefs about abortion. So, knowing the power of words, what do you suggest might work better? Is there a better argument we can make, or in better language, or with a better tone? We know the tone is important on everything we talk about, but what do you suggest we do to win them over to Christ and to seeing life as sanctified?
Well, hopefully you can hear me, because our connection keeps breaking up here. Okay, good. Well, first of all, one thing that I think is critically important, and Sheila, you mentioned the event that we were just at together, was for a pregnancy center. And home for new mothers. We need to, first of all, continue to invest in caring for women with unplanned pregnancies. And we need to talk about how we do that and show that we really do care about women. We truly care about women. We're not offering them, women's situation, not just saying, well, you know, we can get rid of your baby. We say we will help take care of you and your baby. Examples like that, I think, really help to point out the lie that people who are pro-life don't really care about the women and their babies. I think that is one very important thing to do. I still believe that we have to speak always with love, not fall into the trap of as heinous as abortion is, and as the Pope says, it's like hiring a hitman to take care of your problems. Yelling and screaming is not going to win people over. It might get our side more excited. It may, for politicians, raise more money and raise more excitement, but it's not going to really win people over. That is what we are called to do, and I think we just have to keep going back to the example that Jesus set for us as we continue to work. Because we have to not only change laws, but we need to change hearts and minds on the issue of abortion. And look, if Roe v. Wade is overturned by the Supreme Court next year, this is going to get even more difficult, because we are going to have to, on the state level, we are going to have these legislative battles to protect life, because we will be able to do it for the first time since Roe v. Wade, and we're going to have to really get to work doing that and remembering that we do it by winning majorities in the state legislatures. Right. And we need to have more people who are with us and support and understand our position.
Yeah, complacency is not an option. We have to work on everybody running for office, help people, good people, run for office, and then talk with them very honestly and clearly about life issues in very, very clear tones. Everybody's vote needs to be, it's on the record. We need to know how people vote, who we vote for, and be clear on that. Congressman Lipinski is very clear about that. Dan Lipinski, thank you for being here. I love talking with you. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
It's like a civics class on the radio. The Drew Mariani Show. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Drew Mariani Show. I'm Sheila Logminas, filling in for Drew today. So happy to be with you. So happy you're there. And I'm really looking forward to all of our conversations today, because it's going to be across the board. I just spoke with a former congressman, Dan Lipinski. I know one of you called in from Chicago and said you really had nothing in common with the Democrats, except you did appreciate his pro-life work and witness. And you said now you think he should become a member of the GOP. He's been asked that question many, many times, sometimes in my presence at some of these events, when we've been talking and people come up and talk with him and ask him why he didn't become a Republican. He really wanted to work within his party and try to make a difference within his party. And his party went after him in two separate elections. The first one he prevailed, and this last time they prevailed. And so I was unable to tell him this when we ran out of time. That's always the case. But as people say all the time to all of us and to each other in the Catholic world, in the faith-filled world, when, it's the old, when God closes a door, he opens another one. When one door closes, another will open. That something else is meant for you to do. And what I see Dan Lipinski doing now and these days, and since losing that election, and when he got over that, because he was bowled over in the beginning, he had to recover from that. He talked about that at that event we were just at for a pregnancy help center, where he was given a life award. It was a wonderful award, well deserved. he talked about that and the impact of that, especially in the first 24 hours. But then he quickly actually recovered from that loss, realizing there's something else I'm supposed to be doing. And I see him doing that so well. So we'll see. But in these addresses he's giving, lectures he's giving, courses he's teaching, and he's doing a lot of writing, that's what he's supposed to be doing right now. And that's why, you know, we all have to find our place and what it is we're supposed to do. And that's and for some people, it's writing a lot of books prolifically and talking about what they know so very well. So that's my next guest. Mike Aquilina is here, and you know him well from the many books he's written, apologetics and catechetical materials for those who don't know the faith very well and haven't been catechized or evangelized very well. He joins me now to talk about that. And he's executive vice president of the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology. You know that with Dr. Scott Hahn, and contributing editor for Angelus News. Mike Aquilina is author of more than 50 books, including The Fathers of the Church and Villains of the Early Church. They're all compelling. He hosts the Way of the Fathers podcast for CatholicCulture.org and edits the Reclaiming Catholic History series for Ave Maria Press. Mike, it's great to have you here. Wow, that's a lot right there, just loaded into just reclaiming Catholic history, because we have an enormously rich history. So that could be like a lifelong series alone.
Well, it's my work. It's my life work. And I've been at it for some time. Yeah.
Well, I want, Mike, I want people, I know you have, I've got a lot of your books filling my shelves. I want people to know that your latest that we're talking about today is Friendship in the Fathers, How the Early Church Evangelized. So when you go back on that series, Reclaiming Church History, you certainly know the fathers well, and the early church well, and the early disciples, and how they evangelized. And that's what, you know, Mike, tell us, let me just put up the question, tee it up for you, that a lot of things haven't changed from the early church to our time now, or they at least maybe made a leapfrog over all of the intervening eras, and now we're right back there in the early church. But you are using that fact for this book, Friendship in the Fathers, How the Early Church Evangelized, to show us, okay, we're where the early church was. So let's look at what they did. So what did they do that we need to learn from now? And I know that's the topic of your whole book, but let's get started on that.
Well, I think you're right to say that we do have some similar challenges to the first disciples, and those challenges, you know, they faced them for 275 years, really. Mm-hmm. There was intermittent persecution, and it wasn't just a light persecution. Christianity was the practice of Christianity was illegal in the Roman Empire, and to go to Mass was punishable by death. So we did not have access to crowds of people. We did not have access to the social media of the time. We could not publish things broadly. We couldn't stand in the public square or in the marketplace and speak about Christ. Those things were off limits to us. If you tried to do any of those things, you would likely be jailed. If you were jailed, you would likely be killed. So the only avenue open to us for evangelization was personal. It was friendship. It was Christians making friends with the folks next door, with the people in the next market stall, with the people they ran into in the course of their daily work. There's ample evidence of this, that the church grew this way. And if we look back on that history and we see how the church grew, it's a pretty amazing thing. The church grew for 275 years at a pretty steady rate of 40% per decade. 40% per decade. All of this, or most of it, by means of friendship. One person witnessing to another, one heart setting another heart on fire.
That's hard. How do we do that today? Because is it, when you think about, I mean, it's easy for us today to not, in one way, think, oh yeah, I can put my mind in my imagination back in those times from, oh, movies I've seen, things like that. And imagine those, you know, they didn't have paved roads and buildings and technology and all that. So that kind of friendship, I can imagine it might have been a lot easier for them than now, because people talk about, the cancel culture. We're going to be talking just a little bit in a later episode of today's show with a different guests about bullying. And so many people are kind of cowed into silence by bullying and being canceled and so forth. So, Mike, a lot of people are kind of afraid to speak out today and witness to their faith that we imagine was so much easier for the early church. Not really so, is it?
No, it's not, because you could die then. It was that simple. You know, if people denounced you, you
talk
could
about
die.
Canceling.
Right. Ample, yeah, really, really the ultimate cancel.
Cancel so, you.
So yes, I think that what we need today is an openness to friendship, and that's mm-hmm. something that the first Christians had. If you look at the heritage of Greco-Roman culture, the pagan culture, as we call it now, you have men like Cicero and Aristotle writing books about friendship and telling people that, you know, friendship was something hard. It was very difficult, and it was something that you could only share with someone with whom you agreed on absolutely everything, and not only agreed but also corresponded in many ways. Like, you could not have a friendship with someone of a different social standing, or someone who made less money than you, or someone who made more money than you, because all mm-hmm. of these things would introduce notes of dependence or so, you know, other problems into the relationship. And that's true. You know, those things do happen. But the Christians, nonetheless, were open to friendship with all the people they met. Why? Because God himself had taken flesh, had become incarnate in order to befriend them. And on the night before he suffered, he had dinner with his apostles, his 12, and he told them, "I have called you friends. They're no longer servants, no longer slaves. I have called you friends." Now, if God himself could do that, then we can too. And the life of Christ has always been held up to us as a life to be imitated and a life to be shared. Well, if we want to be like Jesus, we need to imitate him by making friends. And if we want to share his life, well, we'd better be doing what he does. We'd better be making friends for Christ and friends for ourselves. We have to be open to it. There's a great saying from one of the saints from the 20th century, St. Jose Maria Escrivá. He said, "Out of 100 people, we are interested in 100. And that really should be the Christian attitude. We should be interested in all the people we meet because they're interesting once we get to know them. But we have to make the effort to get to know them. That's the way the early Christians were. That's how they grew the church.
I think listening to you, Mike, I'm thinking very much of our need, first of all, to see everyone, not as the other, capital O, but seeing everyone, whether it's somebody who ideologically completely opposes everything you believe in, somebody who's actually, you know, being nasty about it or snarky or whatever, you name it. We need to see each and every person as a child of God, of equal dignity, of equal worth, of equal importance to God as you. And that can be hard to do, especially if it's somebody you know well and you're really mad at them or they hurt you or whatever. You just name your grievance and, you know, it's out there. But it starts with seeing the other people around us as of equal importance to God, and therefore that we ought to be knowing them. So what about this? In all seriousness, I ask this because I'm that kind of a person. I want to get a whole lot of things done in a hurry, and that's not enough for me to be. I'm kind of antsy. Well, I want to get it done now, and I want to get it done in a big way kind of thing. I want to make an impact or whatever. Just calm down, slow down. It's funny, Scott Hahn and I have, we share a very early, many, many, many long years ago, a spiritual director that we both had way back in the day. And Father told me way back then that he laughed when I was talking like head over heels, like, "I want to do this, I want to do that." He said, "You remind me of Scott Hahn." And I said, How could that be? He said, "Because you're both in a hurry to do a lot, and I'm going to tell you what I told him." He said, "Just do what God puts in front of you each day, and he'll take care of the rest." And yeah, he said it with just the most gentle demeanor, but to that point of the eagerness to do big things with a lot of people and a lot of stuff and make a big impact, Mike, people want to do that. And what you're talking about is friendship one-on-one. Yes. And people think, "Oh my gosh, and in a day's time, how many people can I really witness to? A few."
Yeah. and there's such a need for it right now. There, you know, we're in spite of social media, which, you know, which we're supposed to make us so connected with one another. We find an epidemic of loneliness going on. You know, we have medical professionals on both sides of the Atlantic identifying loneliness as the greatest health care concern right now because it leads to so many other problems later on. So this is just part of our cultural landscape right now, that there's a friendlessness that's out there, and I think that Christians especially should feel convicted by this. Why is it that we live in a world that we ruled for so long, for so many centuries, you know, that's supposed to have a Christian culture, and yet so many people are friendless? If there are so many Christians out there right now, why are so many people friendless? Why are they lonely? And we have this increase of people who report themselves as having no friends at all, no one in whom they can confide, no one they can tell their secrets to. This was the condition of the neighbors of the first Christians. It's our condition today, and we've got to do something about it.
We do. I've always loved, so former Cardinal Francis George of Chicago, God rest his soul in peace, he's a good family friend. And I loved his books, and it's funny, I was told once, you're probably the only person who gave a parish retreat on Cardinal Francis George's book. And Cardinal got a big kick out of that I did. I was waving it in the air and talking about this book. Well, one of the big things that Cardinal was very high on, because he emphasized it a lot, Mike, was the philosophy of friendship. He was a philosopher, of course. He was a theologian as well. Mm-hmm. But Cardinal George very much emphasized the philosophy of friendship, and probably for this reason that your book is on, is that's how we evangelize.
Go ahead. There's a beautiful document in the book. It comes from the end of the second century. So we're talking about very early in Christian history. So written around the year 190 or 200. It's called The Octavius by a man named Minucius Felix. And it's the story of three lawyers from Rome taking a vacation together over a holiday weekend. You know, and it reads like a novel. It's a beautiful story of friendship. They go off to this resort, Ostia Antica, and there they spend this weekend together, and it's just about the conversations they have. Now, when they when they go there, two of them are Christians and one of them is a pagan. So naturally, their conversation eventually makes its way to religious themes, and they have the hard conversations. They can do this because they're friends and they're professional associates. They have a history of trust with one another. And when they let their guard down on a vacation weekend, they can let their conversation range anywhere. By the end of the weekend, the third man, the outlier, the pagan, has decided to become Christian. He's decided to seek baptism. I believe that's a snapshot of the way conversion happened in the ancient world. And I believe it's there almost like an instruction manual for us today. It's not anything that we need to be trained to do. It's not anything that we need to have a special certification for. We've been baptized. We have the grace. We need to be friends with other people and befriend them into the body of Christ.
It's that glowing sort of emanating something that other people not only notice, Mike, but they want. Mm-hmm. They notice you in a crowd even. They notice you stand out in a way. A person stands out in a way if they emanate something that attracts other people. They'll just look at that person who emanates that and say, that person either is happy, they're joyful, and everybody's looking for happiness. Mm-hmm. And they just have something that I want, and it's sort of a magnetism, and that draws them. I love that you say that we don't need, you know, instructions for this. There's no handbook for this. It's this dialogue. It's this letting your guard down. It's having trust in another person that then you're able to open up, because otherwise, what? A lot of people put their guard up without even realizing their guard is up. So what did you say that was? What was that again, the name of that?
That's the Octavius by Minucius Felix.
The Octavius. That's what I thought. I knew you. I got the Minucius Felix. I just wasn't sure about the Octavia, if it had more of a name than that. Mike Aquilina is here. Calls are the phone lines are open for your calls for him on any of these topics or others. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. When we come back, he's going to tell you more about Minucius Felix, Basil and Gregory, Ambrose, Augustine. You may know Augustine pretty well, you think? Well, let's talk about that. And Jerome and and others you may not have heard of, and why they're important to you today. That comes up next.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Drew Mariani Show. I'm Sheila Logminas, filling in for Drew today. He's got the day off. And I'm right in the middle of a conversation with Mike Aquilina, a friend, and we're talking about friendship and the importance of friendship in witnessing to our faith and evangelizing other people. Don't be afraid of doing that. Be open about that, but be open in a way that other people might find attractive and sort of magnetic. You know, show them something they don't have, maybe joy, maybe happiness, maybe peace in your heart, because a prayer life brings that, and maybe they don't have peace and they're searching for it. Mike Aquilina has written so many books. He's executive vice president of the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology, where Dr. Scott Hahn is as well and runs it. And Mike is a contributing editor for Angelus News. He's author of more than 50 books, including The Fathers of the Church and Villains of the Early Church. Villains of the Early Church, we could have a whole show hour on that. He hosts the Way of the Fathers podcast for CatholicCulture.org and edits the Reclaiming Catholic History series for Ave Maria Press. We're talking about his latest book right now with Ave Maria, with St. Paul Center Press, and that's Friendship and the Fathers, How the Early Church Evangelized. Mike, I said when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the characters, let's call them, in the early church in your book. And you focus on, because you're focusing on the early church and the early fathers, Chapter 1, right out of the gate, you start with Irenaeus. Why? I mean, I use, he's in my litany of saints I pray to every day for different members of my family. He's one of them, but a lot of people don't even know Irenaeus. Why him, and why him first?
Well, right now, he has just been named a doctor of the church, which is a big thing, considering that he's been gone for almost 2,000 years. But Irenaeus is one of the great figures of the early church, and of course, he's one of these people who brings up the fact that God has made friends with us through the Incarnation. And it's no small thing, because the means of friendship was the Incarnation. Irenaeus is battling a heresy at that time called Gnosticism. And Gnosticism would have nothing to do with such an idea as God befriending man in this way, and especially befriending us in a way that took into consideration a physical body and our physical needs and all of these other ideas that the Gnostics found distasteful. So yes, for Irenaeus, it's not a major theme in his work, but it is something that he touches upon, and you can see why.
You can see why in all of your chapters, and you've got them lined up. I mean, Ambrose is there, of course, we know. He taught Augustine, and then Augustine's got his own, so they've each got their own chapter, in fact, right back to back, Ambrose and then Augustine. Mm-hmm. Augustine is a good character because within his own story, he tells his life story. He talks about his friends. He talks about that horrible account of, you know, one of them actually not wanting to go, you know, to the Colosseum, see him and see the horrible things that go on there. And yet his friends, you know, his so-called friends, talk him into it, and he wouldn't go. But then eventually he went, but he couldn't watch until he sort of started to peek through the fingers, I guess. And then once he started to watch, then he sort of got hooked on that. And that's quite a compelling story. So it's through story, right, Mike, that we can really capture people's attention.
And friendship was such an important part of Augustine's personal story. He wrote the first memoir, really the first autobiography that we have, and he tells his story almost as a story of his many friendships. What's interesting about Augustine is that he was a prodigy of friendship. Think about this: the guy made friends when he was a teenager, and these friends he made while he was a teen, they wanted to be with him for the rest of his life. They followed him when he moved to the big city to go to college. They followed him again when he took a job in Italy. And then they followed him again when he moved within Italy to take the top job in his profession at the imperial court. So they followed him all over, and then they followed him back to Africa. They followed him into Christianity. Some of them followed him into the priesthood, and they continued to live with him after he was ordained a priest and then a bishop. So Augustine was someone who had a gift for making friends and keeping friends. He talked a lot about friendship. He thought a lot about friendship. He wrote a lot about friendship. So for my Augustine chapter, I had an awful lot to work with, not only his personal story, but his personal reflection about what friendship meant in his life. And of course, there's the great friendship, which was his friendship with Christ. And he was so grateful for that, and he saw that as the model for all of his other friendships.
We have some time for, if you have a question for Mike Aquilina about friendships or the Church Fathers and evangelization and witnessing to people through your story, give us a call, 888-914-9149. Real quick, I want to let you know this that a college student I know of chose for his confirmation name Boethius. And I thought, that's fantastic. He's an intellectual, a really highly intelligent, in love with the faith. And I thought, Boethius. So he is one of your chapters. Tell us why.
Well, because Boethius is someone who lived during that time period, and also who experienced a great deal of desolation and abandonment in his life. You know, he did have many friends throughout his life, and then he was abandoned when he fell on ill fortune. You know, he was imprisoned, he was exiled, and then finally he was sentenced to death because the king had kind of lost interest in him and had begun to be suspicious of him. It often happens to people who are close to the king. You find yourself surrounded by a lot of friends, and then you start to muse. Once you've fallen from favor, you start to muse about friendship itself and what it really is and what it is not. So Boethius shows us how to work through that and to cultivate friendships that do last, I hope.
That's exactly the idea, is that they're going to last long enough that, you know, you can really get through to somebody, because it's only once they get to know you well that you share your story. And again, sharing your story. So, Mike, I've said that before. Telling people facts isn't going to convince them as much as telling them a story, because people learn so much through the ancient, I think, art of storytelling. So it's really, they can deny facts all the day long, but they can't deny the story you're telling them about what happened to you. It's what happened to you. So tell us, it's important to me to know why, you know, what you tell people about Isidore of Seville, because I've always had a particular, he's among my many, a devotion to, because he's the patron of the internet, right? And how did he get to be that? Well, that's why we should know Isidore of Seville.
Well, you know, he's in the book because he actually he wrote a commentary on the Book of Sirach, and the Book of Sirach deals so much with friendship. So Isidore's words about friendship have survived because of his reflections on the Book of Sirach. Now, what he learned through meditating on the Book of Sirach does show up in other works of his, and so as a result, they ended up in the book. It's convenient, really, to bring him in, because Isidore is considered the last of the fathers of the Church in the West. You know, he lived in the 7th century, and at that time, the culture was changing fundamentally, and so we move from his death forward, we mark a different time period. We begin to consider it the Dark Ages, and not the patristic era any longer. It's a difference in culture. It's a difference in focus, really.
And since we're almost out of time, I just want to get to the fact that you wrap up the book with what lessons today we can take from back then. It's how we started. You note also in that last section that Paul, St. Paul, warned the Corinthians that bad company ruins good morals in 1 Corinthians. And so it's the company you keep and then how you have an effect on that company that you keep. So I highly recommend the book. It's Mike Aquilina's book. Friendship and the Fathers, How the Early Church Evangelized. You can find it anywhere they sell books or at stpaulcenter.com. Mike, thank you so much for writing the book and coming in and talking about it. Time flies.
Thanks again for having me, Sheila.
Great talking with you. Be well, my friend. And all of you, make friends. And with the ones you have now, witness to them. Coming up, we're going to have the Chapel of the Divine Mercy. I'll pray with you.